listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
OBM, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copy provider of the Cleveland Browns. You know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com today. And we go to the OBM hotline right now to bring in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, thanks for taking time to join us today.
How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Good. Let's start with, obviously, there's tons of breaking. Never a dull moment in the NFL.
Yeah, Deflategate.
Deflategate, Lyle Collins. We'll start with Lyle Collins. Your thoughts on his signing with the Dallas Cowboys?
I mean, it's a tremendous signing for Dallas. I mean, you know, at this point, obviously, I think a lot of teams are feeling better about Collins being completely out of the equation in terms of the murder of his ex-girlfriend. So, you know, for Dallas, suddenly you've gotten a first-round pick, you know, a guy who a lot of teams projected as an immediate starter at guard, maybe a little bit more of a long-term project in terms of being a tackle, but very strong, you know, run blocker. And, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, arguably, if Randy Gregory pans out, you know, in the second round there, they've gotten a top five, top seven, eight pick in Randy Gregory, a top 15 pick probably in Lyle Collins, and then obviously Byron Jones, the cornerback, later in the first round. Dallas is looking pretty darn good if a lot of these really big risks end up paying off. Collins isn't such a risk. If he's exonerated, he's fine. Jones isn't a risk. But Randy Gregory and then obviously Greg Hardy, that signing in the offseason, two pretty big risks. But if they can keep it all together this year, that is an extremely talented team.
It definitely is, and to as Nathan said, opening the segment with you, the other main story right now, garnering a lot of interest by all, is Deflategate. Is there any new breaking news? I know most recently it's a foregone conclusion that Brady might be suspended, and if so, for how long?
Well, you know, right now the league office is going through that entire. Well, they've spent really since it was issued by Ted Wells has been going through that report, trying to determine what action it can take. And, you know, the report, unfortunately for the NFL, the report isn't quite as sealed off as maybe the NFL would have hoped. I mean, there are a lot of qualifiers there when it comes to Brady.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, it's pretty clear, you know, he had some involvement there. It's even more clear to me as a reporter when someone says, look, I'm not going to hand over any of my communications, texts, emails. I know a lot of fans are like, well, why would you just hand over your phone? That's not exactly how it works. You're not literally just handing over your phone. You essentially have lawyers sitting down and you go through communications. And, you know, to me, the fact that he wouldn't do that implicates him even further. How strict the league can be when it moves on that is a matter of debate. You know, now to me, if we're looking at a one or two game suspension, which I still think this kind of looks to me like it's a two-game suspension based on some of the other, you know, things that have happened this offseason. I think that will largely be based on the fact that the league can say, look, you obstructed this investigation. We hired an outside firm to do the investigation. You did not comply. That forced this to drag on because I know there was a significant period of time where they were trying to get these communications from Tom Brady and he refused. He sat for an interview, but that's not the same as turning over evidence that they were seeking. So I think the league would like to move on this pretty quickly because, you know, there's going to be some things that have to play out after this. If they suspend him for two games and he decides, you know what, I'm going to fight this and the union takes up that fight, I think the league would like to have that hashed out before the regular season begins. And the Patriots in particular would like to have that hashed out. So I think, you know, the Patriots and Robert Kraft have essentially said, look, let's get this moving. We're going to accept the findings of the report. You tell us, you know, what your outcomes are in terms of the punishment, and let's get the ball rolling on this. I don't think this will last. I'd be shocked if, we went into deep next week and we haven't heard from the NFL what the punishment's going to be.
Are you surprised that after a four-month investigation that was this thorough so that it even included, you know, texts from one of the ball guys to his mom about, you know, the 50,000-yard ball, et cetera, that – you know, all they could come up with was probably and not anything really definitive? Because I read through it, and yes, there's a great circumstantial evidence case that's made.
Right.
But there isn't anything definitive in there.
Well, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence.
Yeah,
to be
for
fair.
Sure.
I mean,
of course.
You know, aside from, you know, having a video of, you know, Tom Brady directing this,
right?
It's a heck of a lot of circumstantial evidence. And to me, I'm sure that Ted Wells and, you know, the essentially everyone he had working on that investigation, you expect to find that smoking gun in Tom Brady's, you know, communication. That, as a reporter, I would know, you know, hey, this guy, if we believe he's directly involved, the chances are there's something, you know, that someone he has texted, there's someone he has emailed, there's some communication that took place between Tom Brady and other individuals, you know, maybe even beyond the two, you know, locker room employees that, you know, may implicate him even further. And for him to withhold those, you know, that's how he's withholding the smoking gun. So it is a significant hole, but at the same time, you know, the league knows that if it essentially holds him accountable for this and he fights it, they could get into a, you know, get to a point where if this has to be, you know, adjudicated, if this has to go to a courtroom, and we've seen other, you know, NFL cases go there, the league's going to pursue those communications. And it could technically get worse for Tom Brady if there's something there. It could technically get worse for the New England Patriots. So, you know, again, that's why I kind of look at a 2-game suspension. I think a 4-game suspension is going to become dangerous, you know, because at that stage, you know, that's a heck of a lot of the season, and I think Tom Brady could stand up and fight that. But, you know, the 2-game, considering what's happened in Atlanta and, you know, obviously what happened with Ray Farmer in Cleveland, kind of seems to fall in that wheelhouse for the NFL. And I would tend to believe that, you know, Tom Brady might be willing to accept a 2-game nick rather than a 4-game.
Do you believe that there's going to be any fine or any implications brought upon the New England Patriots as well as that suspension of Tom Brady?
Yeah, I do. I believe. I think that the Patriots will be fined, you know, because I look at Atlanta's situation and, you know, you essentially had a couple of team employees who appeared to have acted unilaterally, who were pumping crowd noise, or at least, you know, in terms of the proof that was on the table, it looked like a unilateral situation where they're pumping crowd noise into that dome. You can, you know, we all roll our eyes and say, okay, well, you know, no one else knew about this, whatever. But, you know, the Falcons, Rich McKay, you know, someone who was not really implicated in this yet, he was held responsible. And the league proclaimed that, you know, listen, just because, you know, you're not necessarily named as a person who ordered this or had knowledge of it, you know, these are still your employees. These are people you're overseeing, and ultimately you're responsible for that. So I think, you know, the league will look at the Patriots and say, it's still your employees. It's still two individuals who are in your building. Who ultimately you're responsible for, and you have to be held accountable for that. Now, I think, to me, that's what translates into a financial fine. I think if there is a pick stripped, my guess is it would be a late pick, the same as with the Atlanta Falcons, who lost the fifth rounder in 2016. I don't think this is going to be something extremely significant, and here's why. You could open up Pandora's box, and I think that's why the Falcons situation worked out the way it did. You can open up Pandora's box by saying, hey, if you've got two, quote-unquote, low-level individuals in your organization who do something, and all of a sudden you're hammering a franchise and stripping the gems, which is, you know, high draft picks, every single other owner out there now is subject to that. So that really sets a precedent that is frightening for most franchises. And as unhappy as many franchises might be with the Patriots situation, I can tell you a lot of owners aren't going to sit there and endorse stripping a first-round pick from the Patriots because they know, you know, A, I think a lot of them have a good relationship with Patriots owner Robert Kraft, but B, down the road, they know, hey, if somebody does something stupid inside my organization, I don't know about it, I don't want us losing a first-round pick too.
Right, and we're talking with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Now, in the Browns case, Ray Farmer turned over his phone. They cooperated fully, and he got 4 games. Do you think that the fact that Tom Brady wasn't willing to cooperate could cause a stiffer punishment, or they say, hey, this is what it's going to be if you turn over your phone, this is what it's going to be if you don't?
Well, there's two ways to look at this. There's one way to look at, you know, the Ray Farmer situation, say, he fully cooperated, you know, he got 4 games. I would argue, and I think most everyone else would argue and agree, that 4 games for a general manager and 4 games for a starting quarterback
are very different.
Yes, extremely different. And number two, there is at least some precedent set previously when Brett Favre refused to cooperate with a league investigation when it came to former Jets employee Jen Sturger and her essentially harassment case, you know, against Brett Favre that was lodged with the league. Now Favre completely blew that investigation off, wouldn't turn over his phone, which, you know, likely would have implicated him. And the league essentially, they fined him $50,000 and just said, look, you know, you refused to cooperate. It forced us to drag on the investigation. It looked bad. That was a different day. I will say that. I tend to think that if that happened now, particularly in the latest climate in the NFL, I think it would be worse than $50,000. But if I'm Tom Brady's representation, I'm pointing to that and I'm saying, hey, you know, you only did $50,000 for this. How can you hold him more accountable than that? And he also sat down with you for an interview. So there was at least limited participation. You know, I think ultimately when you put all those things together and you look at really what Ray Farmer got and you consider the impact of, you know, suspending a quarterback,
sure.
That's why I think it's going to be something in the realm of two games and not four, just because of, you know, all these different things that are involved. There's a lot of moving parts to this that I think actually do work in Tom Brady's favor.
There definitely are. Charles, how do you feel like this affects Tom Brady's legacy as, in most people's eyes, the best quarterback in the National Football League of all time?
You know, it's complicated. I mean, I don't know. I tend to think that winning always puts things like this to bed. I mean, remember, we talked about Deflategate, and it was this huge thing coming out of the AFC Championship game. But then after the Super Bowl, well, people still talked about it. You know, everybody said, well, you know what, the Super Bowls were played with deflated balls. The second half of the AFC Championship game was played with, you know, fully inflated balls. The Super Bowls played with fully inflated balls. You know, how measurable is this? It doesn't look great, and I'm sure it's something that will always follow him around. But I think as time goes on, the fact that you can't really measure the gain, the advantage that someone gets in ball pressure, and the fact that, frankly, the ball pressures, when you looked at the scale, was not nearly as bad as what I think a lot of people initially thought. We thought, oh, you know, there's 10 balls that are more than 2 pounds deflated. That wasn't the case. I mean, really, there was only one that was that bad. I just think it, in the longer view of history, it doesn't look great for Tom Brady. It definitely looks like, you know, yeah, he cheated a little bit to get an edge, but it's hard to really determine whether that edge led to wins and losses, whether it led to, you know, a great spike in his production and whatnot. Now, if he goes out in 2015 and he's horrible, you know, then maybe that drags him down a little bit. But, you know, he played with fully inflated balls and looked great. So to me, I tend to believe he's going to be okay.
I think he will be too. Ultimately, it's a very forgiving society, but the Patriots are always going to kind of have that blemish over them, even though they've been a model organization. Charles, I want to go back to the free agency period. The night Jordan Cameron signed with the Miami Dolphins, you were all over that story, and many in Cleveland got a report that he was signing here. What actually ended up happening with Jordan Cameron's recruitment that night, and was it close that he was coming back to Cleveland? What actually happened?
I think he was. You know, I think it was, you know, a situation where the franchise had what they thought was a framework of a deal, you know, and I think that it essentially came down to now, do I believe that, you know, Jordan Cameron, his representation said, yes, 100%, we're signed, we're on a plane, we're coming. I don't know that it got that far. I think they reached a framework that, you know, the two sides thought was agreeable. But, you know, remember, he was still in Miami when all of this was going on. And that's actually how, when that news broke and it was so definitive that Jordan Cameron has signed, he's sealed and delivered, I knew he was still in Miami. I knew for a fact he was in Miami. And I thought, it's weird that you can have a signed agreement. It's all done. He's in the fold. But the guy hasn't taken a physical yet with the franchise. He hasn't left Miami yet. How done is this, and why is he still in Miami if this is now being announced? Typically, you wait until the guy's on the flight to the city, or he's actually in the city when something like that gets announced. So I think what happened was, when that word got out there, and frankly, I think the Miami Dolphins already knew what was on the table from Cleveland before anyone reported it, it came down to, you know, Dolphins executives looking at Jordan Cameron, talking to him, and saying, look, we'll give you the same money. Do you want to play in Miami or do you want to play in Cleveland? You know, we have no state taxes here. Is it really the same deal if you sign it here? And I think ultimately at that point, Jordan Cameron said, you know what, the reality is, I, you know, given the two locations, given the state tax situation, Given the quarterback situation and the offensive situation in Miami, I think I would rather play in Miami if the money's equal. And so I think that's what happened. I think he stayed in Miami, you know, and even though Cleveland had a framework on the table that I think they thought was agreed to, he wasn't in the city. He hadn't signed on the dotted line. He hadn't taken a physical. So until that happens, you know, sometimes as reporters, we all kind of get ahead of ourselves, but you know, it was pretty clear to me within probably an hour of that news breaking that it was not going to go Cleveland's way. And I knew for a fact that at that time, Miami was drawing up contractual terms for Jordan Cameron. You don't do that unless you feel like he's going to sign it. And again, he wasn't on a flight. So it was, I think it was clear that you had two sides that had reached it, you know, sort of a verbal agreement, but it wasn't signed and Miami got itself back into the running.
It did. And Charles, Jordan Cameron is one of few free agents to leave this offseason, the Cleveland Browns. And I just like your overall perspective on the Cleveland Browns adding the free agents we did, and then your perspective as well on the draft class that we just announced as brand new Cleveland Browns from this past weekend in Chicago.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm going to say the same thing that everybody says, and I'm sure people are tired of hearing this, but, you know, it's the quarterback situation has to – there has to be some resolution there. You know, the spinning the wheels on the quarterback is obviously, I mean, it's kills most franchises until you can at least find a person that you're sure that you're developing. And I think to me, that's the problem with Cleveland right now. I don't think they're even certain what they're developing. And, you know, the upside is next year is a great quarterback class, but you don't want to have to go to next year to get your quarterback. I think you want to hope that Johnny Manziel gets it straightened out. You know, can be a positive, you know, influence on the field, and, you know, the franchise starts to move in the right direction. You know, I thought, you know, free agency to me was solid. I like the draft a lot more. I like Danny Shelton a heck of a lot. You know, he was a guy who was a little bit, you talk to teams, some teams thought he was a top 10 pick. Others thought he was a guy between 20 and 30. I personally like him a lot. I think he's going to be a guy who will plug in. And he's got a lot of upside for them. And, you know, that line to me is very beefy and should have a heck of an impact. You know, Cam Irving, too, I thought was a great pick. You heard a lot of teams that said there are, you know, maybe two or three guys in this draft that you absolutely know you can plug in as a starter and could be 10-year players. And Cam Irving was one of those guys. He just happened to be a center/guard. And you know how that goes in the NFL. No one, you know, it seems like those are still positions that people don't value. But you say to me, I can plug this guy in for 10 years and he can be a starter, either a center or guard, that's a hell of a pick. So
yeah.
I really like the first, you know, the first two picks, picks in the first round. And Duke Johnson, you know, the third round pick that you guys had out of Miami, I think he's a heck of a player. I think he's a tough player. I got a chance to see him a little bit up close. And, you know, I think that could end up being one of those middle round running backs that we talk about. You know, you can get a guy who can be a high volume carry guy for you and really produce on the field. I think he might be one of those middle round picks that next year we're looking back and saying he probably should have gone a little higher.
Charles, thanks for the great stuff. Just one point of clarification, because we're getting a lot of questions on Twitter about this with Lyle Collins. How did he go through this whole draft undrafted? And is it because if he were drafted, say, in the seventh round, he could opt not to sign that, re-enter the draft, but once he didn't get drafted, then he didn't have that opportunity to go back into the draft?
It's a really good question. If he goes undrafted, he does not have an opportunity to go back in the draft. It's done for him because, essentially, he was eligible for the draft. No one selected him. So you don't really retain any kind of eligibility. You're just a free agent at that point. Now, if you get drafted, you can say, just because of how the NFL league rules work, if you get drafted, you can say, I refuse to sign a contract in this situation. They hold the rights right up until next year's draft, and then you can reapply because you sort of retain your eligibility. You never signed a contract. It's kind of a weird sort of way the NFL works it. But
yes.
Now, that said, why did he go undrafted? I asked the general manager, why did you not spend a seventh-round pick on this guy and just make sure you're at the front of the line if he's cleared? And I thought he put it great. He said, look, unless he's cleared at this point, we have to know he's cleared, because if he isn't, if something happens, you know, on the tail end of this, we can't just say, well, we cut him, we don't got to worry about it. By drafting him, we stuck our emblem right on his chest for everything. Even if we cut him, we're always the team that drafted him.
Yep.
We're always tied. Every time he goes in and out of court, he can hurt us. And the GM said, look, I don't want that to be my responsibility. I will lose my job in that situation.
Very interesting. Great stuff. Really appreciate time. Follow him on Twitter at Charles Robinson. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, their NFL investigative reporter. Thank you so much for the time. Great stuff.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Interesting stuff on Deflategate. Interesting stuff on Lil Collins. Very never
NFL
a dull
investigator.
Moment.
So right. He's got all the inside information.
He certainly does. So a lot to think about and talk about there. We'll kick off hour number two with your reaction to what we just heard. 216-578-0850 on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.